It's time for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. A battle is brewing across the country over new laws restricting abortion, including proposals here in Wisconsin. Elsewhere, Nevada is poised to join a growing number of states looking to change the way electoral votes are handled in presidential elections. And back in Congress, House Democrats and President Trump are squaring off once again, this time over the issue of subpoenas. Here's House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler speaking after former White House counsel Don McGahn did not show up for his questioning on Tuesday.
When this committee issues a subpoena, even to a senior presidential advisor, the witness must show up. Our subpoenas are not optional.
That's leading to new calls from Democrats and one Republican for impeachment investigations or proceedings to begin. Our question this week, would you like to see congressional Democrats begin impeachment investigations against the president or impeachment charges? Why not? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Reed Wilson is a national correspondent for The Hill. Reed, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Well, Reed, I want to touch on what happened at the White House a little earlier today. Democrats and President Trump were set to meet to talk about infrastructure. Things apparently didn't go well. Here's the president talking about why he cut off talks after just a few minutes.
Senator Schumer, Speaker Pelosi, I want to do infrastructure. I want to do it more than you want to do it. I'd be really good at that. That's what I do. But you know what? You can't do it under these circumstances. So get these phony investigations over with.
Part of that was due to what Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi had to say earlier today. Here's a listen.
Would you believe that it's important for to follow the facts? We believe that no one is above the law, including the President of the United States. And we believe that the President of the United States is engaged in a cover-up.
All right, Reed, dramatic, in some cases puzzling events today. What do you make of all this?
This is part of a long cycle that's been really ramping up in just the last couple of weeks, in which House Democrats are increasingly calling on the Speaker of the House and House Democratic leaders to open impeachment investigations, an impeachment inquiry, I think is the technical term, into President Trump. President Trump is clearly getting more and more agitated by this as his administration is blocking or refusing to comply with subpoenas and requests for documents from Congress. Congress has won a couple of battles in court so far over the last, just the last few days even. And so the tension here in Washington just feels like it's rising to a point at which something is going to break. Either the House Dems are going to open some kind of impeachment inquiry, or nothing is going to get done. I mean, shock and surprise, nothing gets done in Washington, D.C. But President Trump is clearly so agitated that he's going to suspend talks on what would be maybe the only big bipartisan win that Congress and the president could come up with this year.
And Reed, Democrats are calling for different things. Some are saying, hey, let's actually start an impeachment process. Some, probably more of them, are saying, no, let's start an impeachment inquiry where they try to do an investigation and round up their multiple committee investigations into one, you know, looking at a potential impeachment. Do you have a sense of how many are on either side of that kind of subtle difference?
Well, it's changing by the hour. I mean, the news conference that Speaker Pelosi held after the House Dem meeting this morning was the latest twist. As you know, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler sort of gave an update in just a few minutes to the House Dems. And basically what we're seeing from leadership is they're trying to hold back this tide, the growing tide, I should say, of Democrats who are calling for a serious impeachment inquiry or just flat out impeaching the president. And I think what the at least somewhat emergent consensus from that group is that they ought to create that impeachment inquiry so that the five major committees that are looking into President Trump can consolidate their inquiries into one area, which would be the House Judiciary Committee. And that Judiciary Committee then investigating and issuing subpoenas left and right would have more legal standing to actually force the White House to disclose those documents. And I think that sort of argument about legal standing is what's going to lead to an impeachment inquiry if we get there.
Democrats and one Republican, Justin Amash of Michigan, a congressman, founder of a very conservative caucus within, or co-founder of a conservative caucus within the House, gotten a lot of attention, a lot of anger from fellow Republicans. Is he going to be a one and only, or is he a tip of the iceberg, Reid?
Well, Justin Amash has always been something of an iconoclast within the party. He's from the sort of Ron Paul libertarian wing of the party, and he's one of those guys who frequently voted no on bills that the Republican leadership brought up when they were in control, and frequently votes against everything, frankly. He is probably one of the only Republicans who's actually read the entire Mueller report himself, and he tweeted his conclusions over the weekend. We haven't seen any other calls for impeachment from Republicans yet, or at least inquiries into an impeachment. Although I will say Senator Mitt Romney from Utah over the weekend called Justin Amash's position brave.
Talking to Reid Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Let's bring on a caller on the potential impeachment issue at 800-642-1234. Jeremy is with us in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Three things. No, I don't believe they should do this impeachment. Two, they need to replace Pelosi. And three, if they actually start the process, you're pretty much handing Trump 2020 election. I'm almost feeling that the right is just basically baiting them, just daring them to do this, because it's going to cost the Democrat Party so much political capital on it. And it's going to really screw up the 2020 campaign for their candidates. So,
Jeremy, thanks a lot for the call. And Reid, Nancy Pelosi has raised that concern that the president might be baiting them to start the impeachment process. That is something that's clearly weighing on her mind, the potential political fallout if they pursue impeachment.
Yeah, and yet, on the other hand, there is Congress's responsibility to conduct oversight. It's, you know, in the Constitution, the Congress gets the oversight of the executive branch, and they've got the investigative powers. So the Dems who are arguing for impeachment are saying, look, we've got to do this. Otherwise, we are ceding even more power to the executive branch, which has been a trend basically since Nixon and Watergate. The power has been bleeding away from Congress and towards the White House. This is the Democrats' opportunity to claw some of that power back. And, you know, whether or not this actually becomes a political boon to President Trump, I'm not sure that fully accounts for what an impeachment inquiry would look like. You can imagine that if you and I talk during an impeachment inquiry, we're not going to be talking about anything else. And that's what's going to dominate the cable news coverage. It's going to be the front page of the newspaper every day. And Democrats will have the ability to air the full, not just the full Mueller report, but basically everything else they want to investigate, too. It's going to be, you know, 6 or 9 months or however long they decide to take of drip, drip, drip about President Trump and his conduct. And, you know, that's not going to look very good. It didn't look very good for Richard Nixon, obviously. Bill Clinton was sort of a different case, I'd argue, because of what he had been impeached for. But, you know, there is as much of a downside to President Trump as a potential downside for House Democrats and the Democratic Party at large, too.
Now, impeachment aside, House Democratic committees have a lot going on. For one, they subpoenaed Don McGahn, former White House counsel, to come to a hearing in front of the House Judiciary Committee. The White House said, don't do it. Can you talk about what is behind this and where we are on that?
Right. So Don McGahn, of course, was the key source, sort of played the narrator role in Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. He is now a private citizen. He's back at his old law firm here in Washington, D.C., and he has been instructed by the White House not to talk to Congress and not to obey the subpoena on the basis of executive privilege, which is the provision that the court is sort of the court precedent that allows a president's advisors not to turn over documents in order to be sure that they can give him candid advice, behind closed doors. It's not clear to me whether executive privilege applies to a former staffer. It's not clear to me whether executive privilege applies to somebody who's, you know, said something for a document that is now for sale on Amazon.com and sitting on a lot of bookshelves around the country. But this is the moment, I think, when Don McGahn declined to obey the subpoena or comply with the subpoena, that House Dems switched from being agitated with the slow response from the White House to starting to openly talk about impeachment. Nancy Pelosi herself mentioned that one of the three articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon was his failure to comply with the request of Congress.
And another story you alluded to earlier, congressional committees trying to get hold of some of Donald Trump's, as a private citizen, financial records, tax records, bank records. We've seen a couple court rulings now, one saying, yep, his accountant should provide records. Now we're hearing Deutsche Bank and I think Capital One. A judge says, yep, they can supply those records despite a suit from President Trump trying to stop that. What are members of Congress looking for there?
Well, they're looking for a couple of different things. The House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal, who's a Democrat from Massachusetts, has been looking for the last 6 years of President Trump's personal and business of the financial records. In part, they say, to make sure there's no interference or influence from overseas organizations or overseas governments. And they have been stymied. They have tried to use a law that's about a century old to force the IRS to disclose President Trump's taxes. That law says very clearly that Congress is able to do that. The Treasury Department, Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, has said he is not able to comply with that. That's going to go to the courts real quick, and it's hard to see how the administration is going to be able to defend that one, especially because the Washington Post has reported that the IRS, in an internal memo, has even said that there's really nothing they can do, and they have to turn over the documents that have been requested by Congress. So this is, again, a part of the continued pattern. President Trump has promised to defy all subpoenas that have come from Congress. The courts are now starting to say, sorry, you can't do that. A couple of weeks ago, people were throwing around the phrase constitutional crisis. We're not in that yet, because we're at a moment where the executive branch and the legislative branch are at a loggerheads, and we have a system to deal with that. It's called the judicial branch. It's the third branch of government. They are just now beginning to weigh in. The problem, and the thing that frustrates Democrats so much, is that it takes a long time for a court case to get from a district court — those district courts have been ruling against President Trump so far — up to a circuit court, and then eventually, of course, to the U.S. Supreme Court. A negative ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court was basically what forced Richard Nixon out of office. You know, we'll see if President Trump has enough time left in office to get to that point, if it were to come, given the 2020 elections that are right around the corner.
It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Reed Wilson is with us, national correspondent for The Hill. Still time for you to weigh in on the issue of impeachment or an impeachment inquiry. Growing number of Democrats say we should do one or the other, and one Republican, too. House leadership still not on board, Democratic House leadership. What do you think? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill. We're talking about some of the top news stories in national politics, including the big standoff in Congress between House Democrats and the president. Let's bring on one more caller on the impeachment issue. Roxy is with us in Madison. Roxy, hi.
Hi there.
What do you think?
I believe they should wait on that impeachment and even talking about it. They should just take care of the American people, because I believe, and I used to be a staunch Democrat, really, really strong Democrat, but I hate to tell them this, I believe they're all going to be in for a rude awakening, because I think when the rug gets picked up and shaken out, I think there's going to be a lot of egg on a lot of Democrats' face. I think they ought to just sit back and wait, because there's a lot of things going on, and I myself personally believe that Mueller is as dirty as a couple of the other people. I'm sorry, but I truly, truly believe that Mueller is dirty.
Roxy, thanks for the call. And there's a case that a lot of Republicans and the president are making themselves, read that, hey, what the investigation should be about, the investigation. We should be looking at what started it, what the FBI did, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a pretty significant distraction that the Republicans have brought up. There are a lot of these stories that border on conspiracy theory about who did what when and. Bottom line, I find it very hard to believe, having watched Robert Mueller as FBI director for 12 years, the longest stint in the second longest stint in the history of the FBI, and the only person after J. Edgar Hoover that Congress trusted to be in office longer than the 10 years the term limited the FBI director has. I have a hard time believing that he's anything but the upstanding prosecutor and sort of rock-ribbed Republican law and order type guy that he was depicted as for the 12 years that he was in office, first appointed by George W. Bush, then appointed by Barack Obama. So, you know, the level of conspiracy theory conversation around all this, I think, is designed as a smokescreen to obfuscate the actual serious investigation that he did. And I'll point out, by the way, that Robert Mueller himself has not jumped into the limelight. He is concerned about testifying in public in Congress because he doesn't want to be seen as political. We have not heard a word out of Robert Mueller in public since he became special counsel, 2 years ago now.
Thanks for that call, Roxy. Let's move on to some issues outside of Congress now, Reed. On Tuesday, we saw protests around the country aimed at a series of laws passed by states in recent weeks to restrict access to abortions. A lot of states changing their laws in one direction or another. Can you talk about how we got here and why now?
Yeah, this is a really interesting change in strategy for the pro-life community, the anti-abortion rights community. Basically, since Justice Brett Kavanaugh took his seat on the Supreme Court, the anti-abortion rights pro-life groups have started taking up this cause of passing legislation that obviously flies in the face of the precedent the Supreme Court set with Roe v. Wade. They know that these laws are going to be challenged in court. In fact, they are all challenged immediately in court. And the moment they are, that's a feature, not a bug, for these pro-life groups. They want these court cases to end up before the Supreme Court, where they now believe there is an anti-Roe pro-life majority that will strike down the precedent set back in the 1970s with Roe v. Wade. Just this year, there have been six states that have passed laws that are meant to be legal challenges to Roe v. Wade. In most recently, we've seen these pass in Alabama, in Georgia, in Missouri. And, of course, there's an effort to do so in Wisconsin as well, although Governor Tony Evers said that he's going to veto that legislation. So this is all an effort to get this thing into the courts. For the longest time, the pro-life side has not thought that they could actually win legal challenges. So they designed measures to pick at abortion rights around the edges, to limit clinic access or strengthen rules or something like that. Now they see the possibility of winning an actual legal challenge, and so they're going to the courts.
Now, Republican political leaders are weighing in on this issue publicly. A lot of Democratic presidential candidates showed up at some of these protests this week. Do you see this abortion being maybe a bigger issue, a more high-profile issue in the presidential election than it may have been in some past ones?
Well, abortion is always kind of an issue in presidential elections. It is one of the clearest issues that divides Democrats and Republicans. You've got to go back to, Johnson or Kennedy to find the last pro-life Democrat and the last pro-choice Republican. Probably got to go back farther than that. The issue, you know, in this time when we've seen sea changes in public opinion on marijuana legalization and gay marriage and the really hot button cultural issues, the polling on abortion has been amazingly stable for about the last 40 years. You know, a larger percentage of Americans believe that abortion should be legal in some cases, but not all, than those who think it should be illegal in all cases. But those numbers are really static, and they have been over time.
Talking to Reed Wilson from The Hill in our weekly roundup of national politics. One more story before we're done. Reed, the state of Nevada this week passed legislation that would give the state's electoral college votes to the winner of the national popular vote. That's if that is signed by the governor. This is part of a multi-state process, right?
Right. Nevada would become the 15th state to sign the so-called National Popular Vote Compact. And what this would do is it does not end the Electoral College. It simply finds a way legally to circumvent the Electoral College. There is nothing in the Constitution that gives you or I the right to vote for President of the United States. It gives that the right to choose the electors to the Electoral College to the states. Now, every state has decided to give their citizens the right to vote, but that takes a legal process. So what would happen under this National Popular Vote Compact, if enough states sign up and they need to get to 270 electoral votes, which is what you need to actually win the White House for this compact to take effect, is that those states would require their electors, the people elected to the Electoral College, to vote for the winner of the overall national popular vote, regardless of who actually won their state. So hypothetically, if President Trump wins the state of Wisconsin by 100,000 votes, but the Democratic nominee to be named later ends up winning the national popular vote, then Wisconsin's electoral votes would go to the Democratic winner as opposed to the incumbent Republican president, and you know, vice versa if those scenarios are reversed. But the goal here is to circumvent the Electoral College. There's no way to eliminate the Electoral College without doing it through the Constitution. Of course, doing it through the Constitution is a really hard thing to do that has barely happened in American history. And so this is the legal way to get around it without changing the Constitution.
So we're at 195. If Nevada joins in on this idea, do you see a lot more states lining up to maybe get this idea of the popular vote being the decider to get that up to 270 anytime soon?
Well, there are a number of states that have taken it up, and the most interesting thing that I watched this year was the number of Republican states that debated the bill, the similar version of the bill, maybe passed it through one of their two legislative chambers, but it didn't quite make it all the way. We saw efforts in states like Arizona, states like Oklahoma. I mean, these are, you know, some of the most conservative states in the country. And what the Republicans who like this idea will tell you is that the demographics of key swing states do not favor their party in the long term, so they got to figure out a new way to win elections based on the popular vote. Of course, the pushback is, well, we won the White House twice without winning the popular vote, both in 2016 and in 2000. Why mess with what's working? The problem for Republicans is what's working isn't going to work all the time, and they're going to scream bloody murder if the opposite happens to them, if a Democrat wins the White House without winning the popular vote. So at the end of the day, the debate in Republican states has been a little bit stymied because President Trump won the way he did.
And thanks to Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill. He joined us for our weekly look at some of the latest news in national politics. Still time for you to share your thoughts on the impeachment idea. You can tweet us, as always, at Central Time WPR.